So, Julie, I often tell people that there are four opportunities to overcoming an objection, the most powerful of which is before the objection happens. Have you ever heard of this concept?
You're always teaching me new stuff, Torin. No, I haven't. Tell me more.
So the acronym for me, and it's something that I used back in the 90s when I had my own sales team, the acronym is WNLB. Well, the B stands for before. And before any of you start to wonder which online system is best for payroll, let me share a few facts. Gusto is actually simple and easy, surprisingly easy and very fast. 90% of customers say switching to Gusto was easy. 85% of customers say running payroll is easier now than their previous provider. And 3 out of 4 customers take 10 minutes or less to run payroll with Gusto. I think that's easy. You can use our link, gusto.com/CATK, for 3 complimentary months. Again, that's gusto.com/CATK.
It's time to stop dealing and start demanding. It's time to stop being PC and start being transparent and authentic. It's time to get real. Prepare yourself. It's time for Crazy and the King.
Welcome to Crazy and the King.
You know, you might be old enough to remember like Fred Flintstone. You remember that show?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So Fred and Barney used to always come rolling in. You know, no floorboard on the vehicle. They'd stop that joint like midstream. You never, ever had ashy or callous feet. Like, I don't understand any of that at all. But they would absolutely make their way into each and every episode. That's exactly how I feel today. Like, I'm sliding in to this episode. And trust me when I tell you, well, let's just say, we're not going to talk about my feet. But the bottom line is I'm here. I'm good.
So I haven't had a pedicure for 9 months. I'm just going to go ahead and say that out loud about my feet. So
man. Maybe it
can be like our next time we see each other, we can go get pedicures together. Have you ever done that? Yeah,
well, I think I've done it maybe like it's been less than 5 times. So I'm just not. There's something about me sitting in the chair and the whole feeling, the whole experience. Like, I'm not a person who does body massages and any of those things. And I know how much they are appreciated by people. It's just for me, I'm always like, yo, I don't know if I really want a whole bunch of folks in my space like that. So it's not the thing that I normally do. And I got to tell you right now, these feet ain't beach ready. So I guess COVID is pretty good in this particular time.
So it's okay to have those Fred
Yeah. You put some socks on and keep it popping. That's what you do.
Amen to that.
Yes, indeed.
So, hey, did you see Tim Sackett's article? Do you get his little, what is Tim Sackett talking about today, what, every single day of your life?
I talked to him. I told him, I said, how do you write every day like this? Like, I get it. And admittedly, I don't always have a chance to read them. But when I do read them, I always read with the intent of sharing and pushing out his articles, because he's always dropping something good and worth consideration. But no, I did not see the one about him renewing his SHRM membership. And that absolutely is a big thing, because a lot of folks was tweeting about that over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And Tim is... he's always going to tell you what he thinks, right? That's one thing I love about him, is he's always going to say exactly what's on his mind in a generally fairly diplomatic way. So he went on to say he is renewing his SHRM membership and why that credential is important. And also that he doesn't get paid by SHRM. But I'm curious as to what our listeners think. I think I've been pretty clear as to my thoughts on giving SHRM my money or my organization's money in terms of you know, exhibiting or anything like that at the conferences. What's the feel that you're getting?
Yeah, well, the feel that I get through my Twitter timeline, outside of maybe, you know, 10 people, and I have a pretty decent number of followers, a pretty decent number of HRTA type people that show up. You know, they're always messing around with the algorithm, and sometimes you get to seeing people like, wait a minute, I didn't even know I was following that person. But inside of my feed, you know, outside of maybe 5 to 10 people, Julie, most people are like, why? Like, why would I renew it? You know, and I don't weigh in on the conversation. One, because I don't think it's totally fair. You know, I've sent out that one tweet where I included Johnny, and I consider Johnny to be a personal friend. So, but I'm not a member of SHRM. I've never been a member of SHRM. I'll never be a member of SHRM. So I'm very, very clear in that. And it's not that I don't see value, but, you know, I've gotten this far. You know, I don't see a reason for me to join it at this particular time in my life. I just kind of like to sit back with popcorn and watch, you know, what other people are saying, pro, con, plus, minus, about the organization. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, it's interesting about, you know, it always used to be the cool kids club. If you didn't have your SHRM membership, you just weren't in the know.
I've been cool all my damn life. I know, always. Right?
Not as cool as you, but also me.
Let me tell you, and some of the way that I've seen some of them folks show up in their gear, I know I'm cool. You know, it's like, you know, the dude with the sheer socks and sandals on. You know, first of all,
yes.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, you know, so
those mandals,
yeah. So, you know, I'm cool regardless. I don't need the designation. Kid already knows how cool he is. But continue, go ahead.
Yeah, well, yes, not cool as in cool, but exclusive, I guess. Way to say it. Because I've seen some of them slides with socks at the after parties. Not kidding. Yeah, but it seems that we've taken a turn, I think, in the SHRM world, and I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal as it used to be. I could be wrong, but check me in a year.
Well, we'll see. I mean, again, the organization is going to absolutely do, you know, what it's, you know, known for doing, which is finding a way to align with the core audience, finding a way to align with those staunch supporters, the people that believe and still subscribe to exactly what you just said, the people that believe and subscribe to the fact that they are the one who sort of has a monopoly on the information and the best practices and, you know, the latest to know tactic or whatever, you know, and I think they'll keep that body. I mean, I think SHRM is membership is over 300,000 people. It's less than 500,000, but over 300,000. I don't see them taking a big hit. You know, I see them, you know, still running with 250,000, 275,000. But I think the people that will walk away are the people that are more like, enough is enough. You know, enough is enough. And like, again, you know, and we don't, I don't want to belabor this, but I mean, again, I stand up and I don't care what mic I'm in front of. You've had a SHRM membership or you're in HR, but what did you do about Me Too and Time's Up?
Yep.
What'd you say about pay inequity for all of these years for women? So I don't need to pay for a membership to be complicit in the bullshit.
No, and it's not an excuse for the bullshit either, right?
So
your SHRM membership is not a free get out of jail free card. And I can tell you some of the freaking HR people I've seen on LinkedIn, y'all need to give that little credential back.
Yeah.
Because I've seen how you talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so anyway, just check out Tim. Let us know what you think. I'm curious to see where D&I really overall is with it. In general, if we're just keeping it to keep it, that kind of thing. But we've got a good show this week. I'm excited to, you know, have our chat last week about environmental racism, which I think is something we need to talk about more.
Yes.
I think student loans would be a great conversation to talk about from a D&I perspective in the next few weeks as that really comes to a head. But this week, we have a special topic.
Absolutely. And I got that little like fake drum roll. I don't know if it's getting picked up on my microphone, but you know, before Transgender Day of Remembrance, which happens to be on November 20th, this is Transgender Awareness Week. And this year, Julie and I designed the show around the visibility of transgender people and addressing the issues that the members of that community face. And trust me, they face issues that continue to push them into the shadow, on the fringes, or you know, the outskirts, the boundary of what we consider to be a full life, and it's completely unfair to them. And so Transgender Day of Remembrance was actually founded by a transgender advocate. Her name is Gwendola Ann Smith, and she founded it as a vigil to honor her memory of Rita Hester, who was another transgender woman, pardon me, killed in 1998. And it's been a lot of murders, unfortunately, in this audience. Jamie Wareham on Forbes said that 350 transgender people have been killed in this year, and that figure is up since last year's total of 331.
And being one of the most violent years for transgender individuals that we have on record. And I don't want to, I don't want to focus on someone's life or their value based on the rate at which they are facing violence. But I think as we look at transgender individuals and their stories as a whole and become more engaged and more intertwined with transgender people in our life, it's important for us to understand that the words and the language that we use can sometimes promote or prevent stereotypes and ultimately violence against transgender individuals, most of which suffer violence are transgender women. And a lot of transgender women of color.
Yeah, and let me tell you, for a lot of people, Julie, they don't really understand. And I'm in some ways amongst the audience that I'm describing right now. But for a lot of people, they don't understand really how large the transgender population is. They don't understand some of the, you know, the pronouns associated with it. So maybe you can kind of jump in and give us some of the backstory. To maybe help some of our newer listeners or our consistent listeners to extend their education of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it is important for us. I think you're spot on, Torin, is that we do have to start at the top, even as talent acquisition, HR pros, even D&I pros are still expanding their knowledge and their comfort level with the basics of how to engage transgender people in not just the workplace, but our lives, right? Being transgender, being LGBTQ is not something that starts when you become an adult. The New York Times recently came out with an article that said 1/3 of New York City's foster kid population identifies as LGBTQ. So these are just kind of good lessons to take throughout life. And the transgender population in the U.S. is just under 1.5 million people that we are aware of. In the world, it is obviously much larger. But I think it's even just a good kind of let's level set, right? About 1.4 million people in the U.S. identify as transgender. And what does that mean, right? And so GLAAD tells us that transgender is an umbrella term for people whose gender identity or gender expression differs from that typically associated with the sex they are assigned at birth.
And let me jump in real quick. And inside of that 1.4 million, or taking into consideration GLAAD's definition of typically associated with the sex that they were assigned at birth. So when we look at that number, are we looking at individuals that have gone through the full transition, or could Torin still show up as Torin, but prefer Torino, if you will, I wear a dress. You understand what I'm saying? What I'm trying to ask?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And that's actually, I think, one of the questions that when I am with my friends who are transgender, that they hear asked most often is what exactly does that mean? And curiosity gets the better of people sometimes. And I'm glad that this is one of the questions I wanted to make sure that we addressed today. And right, as you transition from one gender identity to the other, it's very complex, right? It's not just, hey, if I have a surgery, then that means I'm transgender. Or if I dress as this gender, it means I'm transgender. Transition is super personal and generally sometimes a years long process for people. It's personal, right? It's like coming out and telling our family and our friends that we identify as a gender different than what we were born as. It can be medical, but a lot of times it's not medical. And so we shouldn't overemphasize the role of surgery in a transition process, right? When a person changes gender, it's really when they choose to make that outward expression and identify as a transgender person, regardless of the rest of the steps that they have to go through. Does that make sense, the way I'm saying it?
Exactly. And I like the fact that you said the rest of the steps, because it's not just a physical transition. And even if Torin refers to himself as Torino, there's a psychological, there's an emotional transition that they go through. I don't want to put a finish on that, if you will. I think that there's always some degree of transition. But again, I'm speaking as a straight Black man, and I haven't gone through that journey, and I don't know if there's an end point. But I'm glad that you did say that there are several steps.
Yeah, and there absolutely can be medical interventions and medical approaches to help a person in their transition, but it's definitely not a requirement, and it's not something that as cisgender or non-transgender people that we should assume is necessary to be a transgender individual. It's absolutely not. And you know, one thing that I saw like about a week and a half ago, I watch MSNBC all the time for my news, and Claire McCaskill, former senator from the state of Missouri, she seems fantastic. I enjoy her when she's on MSNBC, was talking about some election stuff, and she used the term transsexual.
Mm.
When she was talking about transgender. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, the far left part of the party just roasted her, and she used the wrong term. And so I thought, even just now, if we can say the terms transsexual and transvestite are not appropriate, those are not words that we should be using in our conversations about transgender people. The right terminology is a transgender person or individual, and the transgender community. So words like transsexual, transvestite, and transgenderism are actually not appropriate for us to use. Some are outdated, some are really stereotype and bias based. So, you know, she had to come back on TV and apologize for using a word that used to be appropriate and wasn't anymore. So that just reminded me, we've got a lot of education to do in this part of our work.
Absolutely. And again, did you say she apologized?
She did. She did. Yeah, she did. Yeah. She,
and again, yeah. I just keep telling people it's all right for you to make a mistake. I was talking about you and I earlier on another recording this week. And, you know, the person said, well, why do you all call it Crazy and the King? And what about mm-hmm. the people who might be offended? I was on Geeks
Googlers, geeks, geezers, and Googlers. I think I probably got the G, one of the G's out of order. And they said, but what about people being offended because you're using the word crazy? And I said, it was very thoughtful for us as to how we named our podcast. And I had reservation. And we decided to move forward with it. It doesn't mean that it's going to sit well with everyone. But I think when people listen, they understand that we're not besmirching, you know, that particular audience, if you will. So I'm glad that Claire apologized. And, you know, it just, again, reinforces that we all have a bit of learning to do.
Yeah, and we're always going to be learning, right? That's the coolest part, I think, about our day jobs and this podcast is that there have been certainly a couple times where after we've recorded, I've said, oh my God, what in the heck did I just say? Cut that piece out. Or I've, you know, called you and said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said that completely wrong. And that's how we get better. So I don't like berating people when they mess up terminology because it is always evolving. And I don't think, you know, you know if someone means it as an aggression or not. And so I think we just need to be focused on education because that's the very first step, right? So we have to get comfortable. And I relate it a little bit to having mental health, right? People are very uncomfortable talking about mental health disabilities because they just can't kind of wrap their heads or wrap their view around it. And I think transgender works a lot the same in parallel because people are worried about being offensive. They're worried about saying the wrong thing. They're very curious and people just don't have a good resource to go to get the right information in their daily lives and a lot of times in their work lives.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think back to, you know, my days in the military over in the Philippines. And in the Philippines, they had something called Billy Boys. And this is a true story, Julie. And
okay,
the Billy Boys, what they would do is they would take their genitals and they would put string on them and they would tie them back in between their legs. And so as they were walking down the street, as they showed up in bars, restaurants, in many instances, and when I say many, I mean many. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but it was a very high percentage that if one of the Billy Boys was in conversation with you, you did not know, or you may not have second guessed whether or not you were talking to a man. And it was so many incidents of violence because mm-hmm. what would happen is, you know, a lot of servicemen or expats would find themselves yep. inebriated. It's 2, 3, 4 in the morning or whatever time it was over there. I mean, bars never closed down. You've taken them back to your home or to a hotel. And now you find out that it's a man and not really a woman. There were so many instances of violence that happened over in the Philippines. And I just think about, you know, how much I've evolved in this particular space and in this way. Because when I was 18, 19 years old, you know, I was like, yo, for real, you are not talking to me. And I think I probably said that because the conversations weren't like they are now. You know, it's not as if the person who is transgender, they just want to talk to Torin. They, you know, whether we're talking about sports or politics, it's a conversation. Then at 18, 19, it wasn't just a conversation. It was really, you know, it was the pickup, period. It was the pickup. There was no, it wasn't any networking. It was truly the pickup. So my feeling back then as a young Torin was, nah, I ain't talking to you. I ain't trying to get to yep. know you. We not getting ready to sit up here and pretend like we friends. So I just really appreciate how I've been able to evolve, how life has assisted me in evolving. Because I love having transgender friends right now. I absolutely appreciate their perspective, their contribution, their presence, if you will. Like I'm never threatened. And that's the part that I find challenging, because many are threatened. Not just men and women. Threatened.
Yeah.
They feel threatened by this.
Yeah. And one of the best kind of engagements I've had is a few years ago, Kristen Beck, who I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Lady Valor. Yeah. But Kristen was a Navy SEAL.
Yep.
Christopher at that time, who transitioned into a new life as a woman. And she was a speaker at a conference I went to, and I got to just hang out, right? Talk about her wife, talk about my son, who was just, you know, coming out at the time as a young gay man, and her journey and some of the just incredible things that she's been through as a human being. But what I enjoyed most was just getting to know her as a person. And that, you know, 1.5 million people is a lot of people, but our country is so big. Probably most Americans haven't met someone who's transgender, especially if you live in, you know, outside of the city or, you know, in the Midwest, where things are not as accepted and open as they might be on the coast. And I think that's where, you know, I've always been an advocate. I've always been an ally. But when we get to know people, you know, and have them in our lives and our careers, all those things that you and I are blessed enough to have, we're able to make that transition and that growth so much more organically, because it just becomes regular part of life.
Yeah. Now, I got to say this to you. You know, I give you the story of the Billy Boys in the Philippines and the 18, 19-year-old version of Torn. I'll talk about the current version of Torn. And this is a revelation for me, and it's still something that I'm trying to work through. I'm not a fan of teenagers being able to make this journey, this transitional experience that you mentioned and we are discussing. I am still struggling with that. I remember, you know, the case of Dwayne Wade and his child or their yep. child. You know, and I struggled with that, you know, certainly not in a way where I'm looking at them sideways, but I always ask myself, you know, how would I handle, you know, that scenario with one of my own children? And I just mm-hmm. This version of Torin is not going to tell, you know, if I had a 12-year-old son or daughter, that it's all right and acceptable for them to go through a complete process. That's not something that I've come to terms and come to grips with. If I was to meet Dwayne Wade, Gabrielle, and their beautiful family, it would not, first of all, I wouldn't be starstruck, but I wouldn't have reservations. You know, I would not be. I see them as people, and I'd enjoy a conversation, and it wouldn't be an impediment for me and I forget their daughter's name, so I don't want to say the wrong name. But it wouldn't be an impediment to me. It wouldn't be me looking sideways. You know how you go over some of your friends' houses, and when they walk out the room, you look at Chad and you like, you know, it wouldn't be that. You know, I'm cool with it, but I just don't think that I could support it in my child. So I'm still working through my own issues with, you know, this and where we allow these decisions to take place in life and at, you know, at what stage of life.
Yeah, well, I mean, thank you, right? It's not easy, especially in our day jobs, to be transparent about the biases that we are still working through. And we all have them, and we still all have to work through them. You know, I always say that God gives us exactly the right amount that we can handle.
This stuff.
And so I know that as a parent of a gay man, that I had to draw on resources that were outside of me.
Okay.
And that's why groups like PFLAG and GLAAD and the one in New York is gonna escape me right now, but those become so critical because LGBTQ youth are the most likely to attempt suicide, have addiction issues, become homeless, victims of sexual assault and violence, because it is not easy to be a parent, period. And then when we are given, I don't want to say outside normal because that's not what I mean, but something that we didn't expect to encounter as a parent, a lot of parents fail. And I am 100% certain if your circumstances changed with one of your kiddos, that you would be up for the job and you would find those resources that you need. But I think as parents, it's also okay to say, I just don't understand. I don't know, because there are other parents who've been through this, and that's really important.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 1,000%. You're absolutely right. One thing that I do want to throw in, even though it's happening over in London, it's something that could very much so happen, or perhaps even be happening here in the US. There's a group over in London by Not a Phase. And the group is, when I say Not a Phase, P-H-A-S-E, they're actually offering free alarms for transgender individuals. These are ear-piercing alarms and, of course, giving them out so that they can be safe, you know, when they are in communal environments, moving about, you know, throughout their day-to-day, because unfortunately, you know, things are happening to them and community, and they want them to be safe. And I want everyone to be safe. And that's part of the reason why, you know, Julie and I didn't hesitate to curate the show this week around the community, because it's really about awareness. You know, a decision that an individual makes as it relates to how they wish to show up is none of my business. That's the way that I look at it. It absolutely is none of my business. And as long as they are not harming themselves, harming me, then I see them as a friend, and I want to be supportive so that they feel whole, seen, welcome, all of those other great things. So I appreciate the journey that I'm on and learning. But I got to tell you that that whole bathroom issue is still an issue for a lot of people. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like organizations need to come with, you know, unisex bathrooms? Do you feel like they need to do the men, the women, and then one in the middle, kind of like that family bathroom that people use? What do you have an opinion that you are, you know, care to share?
Yeah. So the bathroom issue is a way to stereotype and create fear against transgender individuals, right? So if I am a man who is going to assault or hurt a woman and I dress up as a woman to gain access to the bathroom, that person is someone who is committing a crime, who is sexual, you know, who is an assaultist, a rapist, he is a criminal. That's not the same as being a transgender woman who just needs to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And so when we demonize transgender people, and we've done this with gay men as well, as predators, that's a trope that is used to keep individuals from having full and fair access. And people who are criminals should be arrested. That's a different conversation. And so I really like the bathroom issue has always been something that after I went to Europe for the first time, I came back with a different perspective. Like I've always thought, just make the bathrooms unisex, like, you know, everybody's individual. I don't really care. Or just go to the bathroom assigned of your gender expression. But what I saw in Europe is everyone just used the same bathroom, right? Have you ever like gone sightseeing in Europe? I know you have because we've been there. And there's a bathroom. I went to Versailles and there was a bathroom. And I kind of laughed because the guys had to stand in line just as long as the ladies did. But there were not, at least, you know, in Western Europe, those same fears or separations of sex for those kind of things. And so I don't know if I'm making sense, but I think you just should go to the bathroom. We shouldn't demonize people through tropes, which is really what I think is the purpose of the bathroom ban issue. And who really cares?
Yeah, well, let me.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, again, for me, I just think make a general bathroom. You know, make the bathroom. I think about this incredible restaurant up in New York City. It's like a coffee shop, and you walked in one door. So there's one door, a large sink in the middle of that room that you just entered, and then there are six individual rooms with doors on them. Go in and pick a door. If the door is open, use it. That it's just unisex, period. And so I just think that, you know, we're making too much of a big deal around the bathroom issue. And I think that, again, inside of our workplaces, we can cut down on some of the stigmas, some of the unnecessary tension by making some, you know, simple decisions, if you will. So for me, I just think putting, you know, unisex bathrooms in office buildings is a smart way to go. But what we'll do is we'll make sure we drop it's a bit of a dated article. It's one that I found. You all may have you know, found some other ones, and feel free to tweet them out to Julie and I. But in the show notes, we're going to include a link to an article as it relates to the bathroom. We're also going to include a link to an article from SHRM, which goes back to a point that Julie made about 20, 25 minutes ago around the journey. And this article from SHRM is really around, when does the transitioning period begin? And it really talks about, you know, how you maybe evaluate that from an HR perspective inside of your organization. Good, bad, indifferent. It's just an additional resource for each of you to have at your disposal. So that's that. Any name drops for you, Jay?
Nope, but I am definitely looking forward to our interview next week with Jerome from Smart Recruiter, so he can be my name drop for this week.
Oh, beautiful thing. All right, mine is Joanne Lockwood. You can find her on Twitter at Joe_Lockwood1965. Again, at Joe_Lockwood, LOCKWOOD 1965. Great newsletter called Inclusion Bites. So Joe happens to be my name drop for the week. Good show. I appreciate you. And thanks for, you know, making space and allowing me to kind of usher in one of my, you know, biases, as you call them, but it's the truth, one of my concerns, one of the challenges. So thanks for allowing me to have space to do that.
Yeah. Hey, you do it for me all the time, right? That's what we're here for.
Beautiful.
So I'm looking forward to next week and getting some Thanksgiving going and having a great conversation with Jerome.
Awesome thing. I close reminding each and every one of you, share the pod with your digital tribe. This is the way that we all do better. You share our conversations with them, and hopefully they help them to see the world a bit different. Have an awesome rest of the week. Catch me on SiriusXM channel 126, 10 a.m. on Sunday. For now, Kid is Ghost.
See ya. So, Torin, we have a sponsor.
Mad cool. That says that they appreciate the work that we are doing through this podcast vehicle.
You know what else is cool is what other people are saying about Gusto.
So give me examples. I mean, it's easy for you to say people are talking about it, but give me some examples.
So Tom S. said, Gusto has allowed my small company to offer big time benefits without an HR department.
Shout out to Tom, but do you have more?
Yes, I have another one from Station who says, Gusto is effortless, which is how I like HR. Out of sight, out of mind, yet doing what it's supposed to do.
So what you are saying is Gusto is more than a payroll provider.
Absolutely. And Gusto integrates with all of your favorite tools that, again, makes life easier. Tools like QuickBooks, Google, and many others. So if you visit gusto.com/CATK, that's gusto.com/CATK, you'll get 3 complimentary months from Crazy and the King.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcasts, and now available on YouTube.